Hey, it's Chuck Armstrong with Loudwire Nights, and this is Loudwire Nights On Demand. We had the chance to chat with Tuck Smith about his new music, about his journey, and about so much more, man. This interview first aired on Tuesday, March 10th. Let's go. Well, you can call him a singer, a songwriter, a frontman, a guitarist, whatever you want, but there's no question that the best way to describe tonight's special guest is simply rock and roller. Tuck Smith, thank you so much for hanging with us, man.
Hey, buddy. Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
So listen, this is the kind of the first introduction for you to the Loudwire Nights audience, and I can't thank you enough for being here. You're from Atlanta, you're the frontman in the band Biters, and then in 2020 started the Restless Hearts. What led you to wanting to do that, to start the Restless Hearts?
Well, we would probably need like an entire autobiography to do that, but look, man, you know, sometimes the coolest bands are the ones that are a little bit dysfunctional and you know, dangerous and maybe self-destructive. So there was an allure to Biters. We were like a family that fought, and we had been a band for like 9 years, dude. And I just couldn't see it really going further. And then we got in some record label issues, some legal issues. And that was kind of the final nail on the coffin for my decision. And I know a lot of artists get in situations with labels, and it kind of stops them from being able to release music. And then they either go solo or the band breaks up. So it was a numerous things, but the last nail in the coffin was legal things, which is the last thing you want to deal with being a musician.
Yeah, for sure, man. And I mean, good for you for, I guess, seeing that writing on the wall, right? And making that decision.
You look, dude, I didn't know what I was going to do. I was worried about like being a quote unquote solo artist because it seems like such an egotistical thing to do. But for me, it was just about to have the freedom to be able to move at the pace I wanted to move. I mean, look, dude, even the Beatles, there was members holding them up and causing problems.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes when you get in relationships with people, you don't act the best. So I kind of wanted a fresh start. And what's cool, within 18 months of leaving Biters, I had like a, you know, this day and age, it's hard to get a big record deal, but I landed like this amazing record deal. I did a record with producer Rob Cavallo, and he's did everybody from Shinedown to Green Day to My Chemical Romance to Lincoln, huge. And then I got slated for the Motley Crue tour, which was crazy. So I felt like I was almost actualized and I made the right decision. And, you know, it's not easy to leave your band, but I was stoked.
Well, yeah. So you say all that, but you know, the first single you released, What Kind of Love, came out on January 10th, 2020. And then a couple of months later, as we all know, the world shut down, cause of the pandemic, and that tour with Motley Crue, you know, didn't happen. And the album you're going to release got shelved, and you left that label that you were on. And so like, making that decision to leave Biters for everything that you just said, and then taking that leap to do your own thing, and then getting hit with all of that, man. I mean, just it's wild. What kept you focused during that time to not just kind of throw your hands up and be like, I'll do something else?
I mean, look, dude, I'm probably not the brightest person in the world with common sense, because I probably would have quit this a long time ago. But you can't help what you love. You can't help who you love. You can ask me, people, why do you keep? I have no idea why I wake up and am so driven. I work constantly on this, but I will say, I felt after struggling in Biters, and we did good. We had two top 40 records in the UK, and we did, but you know, we were making no money and we couldn't really get a big break. So for me to get a break like the Def Leppard Motley Crue tour and to walk off stage while Joan Jett was walking on was like, I really felt like I finally was on my way and I wasn't going to mess it up. And when COVID came, man, I lost an Airborne tour. I was about to get a Kiss tour. I was so happy. And so the psychological effects on me, it was really hard to sit at home after hyping yourself up to go on the world stage. I mean, I had did tours where, you know, like theater tours opening, but to be able to play stadiums, man, and I was going to have my shot, and then to kind of get it taken away was absolutely brutal. But you know, look, man, COVID, it ruined a lot of people's plans and ruined a lot of people's lives. So I wasn't the only one affected by that. So I can't put a pity party, but it was pretty brutal on me.
You know, you say like, you can't pick what you love and that kind of thing. I mean, was music something that you always wanted to be part of from a young age?
You know, I was just doing it blind. Just, I had no idea. There was no thought to it. I'd always played in bands when I was a teenager in punk bands. And then I went to the punk scene and kind of got into, you know, New York Dolls and Hanoi Rocks and Dead Boys and the CBGB scene. And then I got into glam rock and all kinds of stuff. And then I really got into songwriting and production and the whole thing. So like rock and roll has just really been all encompassing to me in some form or fashion for the majority of my life.
Growing up in Georgia, how did you get hooked into that punk rock scene?
You know, look, dude, where I grew up in rural Georgia, middle Georgia, deep south, there's some people that influence you in good ways and some people that influence you in bad ways. So the stricter, more religious zealot, the more closed-minded, the more I wanted to rebel. And I think looking back, I probably should have went to therapy, but now, you know, doing therapy on my own self, I realized that it was just all a way for me to rebel and put like middle fingers up. So, you know, I was anti everything and dyed my hair and F you. And it was a very combative thing. And that was kind of from my home life kind of spawned that. So, you know, that's how I got into it. But then I got into all kinds of stuff from that and met so many people. So it was a beautiful thing, man.
Do you remember the first band or the first record or song that you heard that kind of made you think like, oh yeah, I should rebel. Like this gives me that sort of outlet to rebel.
You know, I think, you know, MTV was still kind of around when I was like 10 or something. And like, I would watch it all the time. And that Rancid song, Ruby Soho, came on. And I turned it up. I didn't know. I'd never seen anything like that.
Yeah.
Coming for, you know, they had the big mohawks and stuff. And I remember my stepdad came in there and goes, turn this bull off. And like, done. I was like, okay, that's it. Anything to piss my stepdad off is what I wanted to. But it was probably something along the lines of that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that makes total sense. Did you feel like, did you have camaraderie growing up in rural Georgia? Like, were there other kids like you finding that?
I found some deeply troubled people such as myself. And I think a lot of musicians struggle some form or fashion. You know, it doesn't matter how you're raised, your monetary background. You know, some people just are artists and want to be creative. And yeah, I did find a band in high school. And we played all the train depots and the house shows and
yeah,
really did it, man. Like, I was going for it.
I love that, man. So what was that turning point for you to kind of, you know, you're immersed in the punk rock world, all these artists loving that music, playing in the band, you know, as a teenager. But then, you know, you kind of eventually, years later, decades later, you know, shift more into this rock and roll that Tuck Smith and the Restless Hearts are known for. What sort of was that turning point for you?
I think, you know, in Atlanta, I was kind of fortunate to be mentored by some guys who were older than me that have almost made it to the top of the mountain and quite didn't. And they ended up doing a lot of production things. And I kind of mentored under some producers and things like that. And I really, it dawned on me that to do what I wanted to do, it was about the song, not about my hair, not about smashing shit on stage. Yeah. I had to figure out how to write songs. And once that clicked, I was full on. And then when you get into songwriting, you really, you resonate to the great songwriters. You know, John Fogerty, Tom Petty, Van Morrison, all that kind of stuff. And my mom always liked music that was older than her. So I remember we would grow up listening to CCR and Tom Petty and things like that. And so I kind of went full scale back to that kind of stuff, the classic songwriters and everything. And once that happened, I was able to open my musical palette, you know, because a lot of times when you're in scenes or subcultures like metal or punk, you're really only into that, right?
Yeah.
And so when I got into songwriting, it opened up my brain.
I love that, man. Well, fast forward to now, you know, last year you released your latest EP, Troubled Paradise. It's been a few months since that came out. How's it feel, man, to have that out in the world?
You know, it feels really good because at this point I'm recording my own records as well and producing them. So it's a lot of work. And when they come out, it's kind of a relief. And you don't know if people are going to like it because you're so close. But the last record I did in the EP have really been, it feels like steps up for me. I'm starting to be more respected by some of my heroes and things like that. And that's really important for me. So yeah, dude, I'm stoked.
Well, and you say releasing it on your own, and I think that's a big part of this, man, where you talk about these label frustrations and these legal issues and starting out on your own, and then everything with the pandemic. I mean, you eventually started your own label, right?
I did. It was just a means to an end. I wanted to release music, and I really have nothing against record labels. I honestly like a lot of people on there. I think what happens with a lot of artists is they get signed to a record label, and the label pushes them to do things that aren't necessary in alignment with them as an artist. And for me, I don't really want to cover top 40 songs. I don't want to be a TikToker or an influencer. I have nothing against that. I think if somebody's personality lends to being a social media influencer, then you should go for it. But there's also an entire demographic of people that don't really want to do that. So being able to release music on my own, kind of do it on my own terms, is pretty cool. I did not anticipate how much work it was
Yeah.
going to be and how much clerical work. There's a lot of things that I didn't have a skill set for that I had to learn feet to the fire. And now I learned it and I'm grateful for it. But yeah, man, it was a lot.
Yeah, when you get into rock and roll, or even this, you know, this cool idea of having your own label, even if it is, you know, you pursue it as a means to an end. Yeah, you kind of don't also think about, well, to actually make it work, there's a few other things you got to do.
Yeah, dude, it was a lot. I mean, starting, business license and contracts and ISRC codes and oh man, I could go on and on the emails and stuff. It was a lot, but there's something really fulfilling about like farm to table. I tell people I don't have a franchise. I have like my own food truck in the corner lot that like, and I make every taco and serve them. You know what I mean?
I
That's
love
kind
that,
of how.
man. Well, and as if you're not busy enough, I mean, you also are a songwriter and producer working with other artists too, right? They're and those are, though obviously very similar, they are two different things: making your own music, playing it on stage, having that rush, but then also sitting behind the scenes working and developing other artists and helping them achieve that. What do you dig about that side of what you do?
Look, dude, I think that a lot of musicians, including myself, can be incredibly self-centered and self-absorbed. And so,
No.
So for me, it's like it's a job and I make a living and I've been fortunate enough to, take care of myself
Yeah.
financially the last couple of years. I'm so blessed to be able to work with artists, but also it feels so good to be able to help people finish songs and see their ideas come to fruition. Because when I was coming up, a lot of people helped me and I learned so much. So, I'm working with like three or four artists right now, and some are younger and some are older. And just to be able to get there and create and kind of live in that creativity, it's almost spiritual for me. It's almost like religious because, 4 or 5 days a week, I'm like writing or recording or I'm sitting in front of Pro Tools constantly, and it keeps my mind at bay because if I was just sitting around waiting to play a show, I'd go crazy.
Yeah.
It's very fulfilling, and I do love it, man.
Well, I love that. And yeah, you were talking about, you know, being in Atlanta and having some guys mentor you and, you know, to sort of be able to keep that cycle going now with where you're at. Like that's such a cool thing, man.
Yeah, dude, I've got this young female artist that's absolutely amazing here, and she really doesn't know the business side, but she's the most incredibly talented person, and it feels so good to kind of be able to like mold the songs for her and help her get her voice and find her sound. And the cool thing is I don't get credit on stage or anything. So it feels like an act of service, which to me I need personally just to keep myself level.
So you released Trouble Paradise last year, you know, working with these other artists. What's on the horizon for you and the band this year?
Well, I just got back from like a 36-day European tour.
Yeah.
And look, dude, we're doing it bare bones. It was brutal. So I do love touring, but it's just not as just financially the way it should be. So I have to be a little more picky about shows I'm doing. So I'm going back to the UK this summer, and You know, I wrote like 40 songs with and for other people last year, maybe more. So I had a hard time writing for me. So the last couple months, I've just been really, since I've been home, writing my stuff, trying to get those ideas out. So hopefully I'll have a record and some shows this year for sure.
Right on, man. I love hearing that. Tuck Smith, thank you so much for hanging tonight, man. Listeners, stay caught up with everything happening in his world at TuckSmithAndTheRestlessHearts.com. And man, I know this is just the first time we've had the chance to chat, but hopefully it won't be the last. It's an open door here. You are welcome back anytime.
Thank you, man. And I just want to tell you how much I appreciate you for playing my music because I'm kind of an outlier genre-wise. There's not a lot of places for me to fit. So very grateful when somebody like you pushes, songs of mine. Thank you.
Well, and like you said, man, when you kind of figured out it's about the song, right? Not about the haircut or anything like that. Like I think that's really the beauty of rock and roll and of music. Yeah, there are gates and gatekeepers, of course, but there doesn't have to be, man. If a song's good, a song's good, right?
Yes, exactly. I wish it was that easy to write one.
Fair enough, man. Tuck, thank you so much for the time, man.
Thank you, buddy. Okay, hopefully I'll come back.
That wraps up this episode of Loudwire Nights on Demand. Stay caught up with everything happening in the world of rock and metal on the Loudwire app and at loudwire.com.